With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
From 104.7 WHUP LP Hillsboro, this is She and Her. I'm Sandra Davidson.
And I'm Anita Rao. Welcome back. We're happy to be back in the studio live tonight. It's been a couple of weeks since we've been here, because we've been out in the world doing some other things.
We have. What have we been doing, Anita?
We had our very first live event last Thursday at Motor Co. We got together with three other Triangle-based podcasters to do a little podcast showcase on stage.
Yes, we did.
Our moms came, of course, and killed it. We wore sequined tank tops, which made noise, which was great.
Yes. What Anita's trying to say is we had stage presence.
We had stage presence. That is what I'm trying to say. No, but we had a great time, and we are really enjoying connecting more with other storytellers in the area, and we're going to continue to do that in the spring.
Yes.
With
a course at CDS, the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke. So Anita and I are going to be teaching Podcasting for the People, which is basically a 6-week long boot camp that begins in February, ends in April, Tuesdays from 7:30 to 9:00, and we're going to walk people through the entire process of pitching a show, putting a show together. How do you make this happen? How do you make it successful? And we are really excited to be doing that. And we're going to put information about how you guys can register for that online on our Facebook, our website, and the rest of our social media. But definitely check it out.
I went to a podcasting conference this summer, a Women in Podcasting conference, and they were talking about how even though in the top, I think the top 100 podcasts on iTunes, like the great majority are women overall, women make up a very small percentage of podcast hosts. So we especially encourage any women that have podcasting ideas to come on out.
That's right.
But moving on from business to our show tonight, we're really excited to be joined in studio by Emily France. She is a dynamic fiddler and guitarist and singer from the duo Mandolin Orange.
She's a local.
She is.
And she has been performing with Andrew Marlin since 2009 as Mandolin Orange. The two met at a bluegrass jam session and started making music together shortly after, and they are really known for their evocative, sparse sound and skillful songwriting, and they are now a fixture on the folk and Americana circuit. They released their third full-length album, Blind Faller, just this fall, and have recently returned to Chapel Hill after what appeared to us as a grueling tour schedule. Emily, welcome to She and Her.
Thanks for having me.
We are excited for you to be here. So we'd love to start by you taking us back a bit to talk a bit about your earliest memories of even playing the violin at all.
Yeah, my earliest memories, I tried to start taking violin lessons when I was a little bit too young, I think. And then my mom put the brakes on it because she didn't want to have to force me to practice. She felt like she was being mean or something. But my parents really wanted all of, I have two sisters, and they really wanted all of us to have to take music lessons in something. And so they just let us all choose what instrument that was going to be and made us commit to it and said, this, you know, think long and hard about your choice because you're going to have to stick with this instrument. And I have no idea why I chose the violin, but I did.
And you stuck with it.
Yeah. Thanks to my parents, they did make me do that. But I took Suzuki violin lessons, which is like classical, where you learn to read sheet music, but you also do a lot of learning by ear, which I'm really glad I started at a young age. And then I kind of lost interest with the very sort of strict classical approach after a few years. And I really was just uninterested and begging my parents to let me quit. And they that was when they said, well, we won't let you quit, but you can take fiddle lessons or some other kind of style of music that's a little more fun. And that was my entrance into bluegrass and old-time music.
Tell us what that was like.
It was really fun for me. I think part of it was I switched teachers. So I switched to a fiddle teacher, and she was like this really young, cool woman that lived out in the country by herself. Her name was Betsy Chateau. I don't think she lives around here anymore. But I was 14, I think, at the time. And so I was just really highly influenced by how cool she was. And so the fact that she was my fiddle teacher and bringing this new music into my life, I think it really just made me identify with it a lot more and think it was super cool. But that was really the beginning of my relationship with bluegrass and traditional music. I didn't necessarily grow up with it at all.
So when you went to UNC Chapel Hill, did you go with the intention of doing anything musical in college, or did you think it was sort of going to be a departure for you?
I definitely did not. By the end of high school, I had kind of lost some of my focus with music. And so by the time I was starting college, I don't even know if I had my fiddle with me in my dorm room. And it wasn't until a few years into college, really, when Andrew and I met through some mutual friends of ours, the Big Fat Gap, who have a local bluegrass band, that I was just starting to think about how I would like to have that in my life again. But it was definitely not part of my academic experience at all.
Hmm. And tell us more about you guys meeting.
Well, it was almost exactly 8 years ago because it was on Obama's first inauguration day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it snowed that day. And there was just a lot of excitement in the air. And I remember I got a really random text from my friend Miles, who plays in Big Fat Gap, and said they were having a jam at the Armadillo Grill that night in Carrboro. And it was totally on a whim that I went, because I never really saw those guys and wasn't playing that much music at that point. But I went, and then Andrew and I met that night, and we played a lot of traditional tunes, and it was mostly like traditional bluegrass tunes at that point that we were playing together, and then gradually started working in a lot of his more original material that he was writing at the time.
What did it feel like to be in that jam space when you'd been away from the fiddle for quite a while, or a couple of years?
Definitely personally felt rusty, but really exciting at the same time, because it's just really fun to play music with people, and especially when that's been absent from your life. Yeah. I think I don't even remember what that feels like anymore, because music is such a big part of my life now. But I can remember it just feeling intensely satisfying in this way that nothing else really is.
Do you want to give us a sample of some of the more old-timey stuff that you do?
Yeah. I'm going to do a attempt a fiddle tune that I thought was sort of appropriate. It's called Old Ebenezer Scrooge. One, two. Thank you.
Emily France playing old Ebenezer Scrooge on the fiddle.
Love it. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
So, okay, you guys were jamming and then you started playing music and working on music, original music outside of it. What drew you towards this genre of bluegrass and folk music?
I think a lot of external factors. It wasn't necessarily that I was pulled really strongly personally to that music, but it seemed like there were opportunities there. When I we were talking earlier about Betsy, after I started taking lessons with her, she kind of introduced me to some folks that I started playing in a bluegrass band with when I was in high school, and it was a bunch of much older men and then me playing fiddle. And that's where I really learned a lot more about how to play with other people and what the fiddle's role really was in the music. But I got a lot of really positive encouragement from them and from a lot of other people that I was able to play with during that time. And so I think I just kind of stuck with it. It wasn't necessarily that bluegrass really pulled me in. It was more that's where the opportunities were, and that's kind of what I knew how to do, and so I did it.
You said that playing music with people is really fun. Can you kind of describe what that feels like to you when you're doing it?
Yeah, I think it's a more distant feeling for me now, because like I was saying, I do it all the time, but I think especially when you're younger or when you're doing a lot of solo practice and work, you're spending hours a day playing by yourself all the time and working on things, and you just get really used to hearing yourself. And so then when you play in a context with a bunch of other parts that are complementary to each other, other instruments and melodies and things, and you hear it all come together, and all of a sudden it sounds like music instead of just the part that you're playing, it just gives you some kind of high, I think.
So I'll have to admit, it took me forever to really think about the pun in the band's name. But is there...
Wow, that just occurred to me.
You're kidding me.
It took me a little while, too.
What's the origin story of the name?
Oh, wow. Nothing.
You guys heard it here first.
Nothing really all that profound. You know, Andrew is the songwriter, and he just loves wordplay of all kinds. So I think at the time, actually, he was just learning to play the mandolin, and he was borrowing a mandolin from a friend, and it was little and orange and round. And he just sort of came up with that, and here we are.
Here you are.
So many years later.
It stuck.
Well, can you take us behind your creative process? So he writes the material. How do we get from there to what we hear on the record?
Andrew is the songwriter. It's something that I've never really felt a calling to do. But I'm around a lot when he's working on the songs, which is nice for me because they kind of subconsciously make their way into my head. And I'll be humming harmony parts or hearing melodies or things like that before we ever really sit down to play the song together. So at some point in the process, sometimes it's before the song is finished, but a lot of times it's when Andrew feels like he's gotten it to a point where he feels like lyrically and melodically it's complete, and then we'll sit down and figure out whether he's going to sing it or whether I'm going to sing it, and if mandolin fits better or fiddle fits better, and it just kind of depends on the period of time as well, whether we're trying to tour just as a duo, which is what we've done for the majority of the time that we've been playing, but we also sometimes are playing with a band, and that can really impact the way we arrange songs.
Tell us a bit about that duo dynamic and how you navigate spending so much time with one person.
Well, it's interesting. My parents have asked me the same question, but I think neither of us really knows any different because we were so young when we met that we never really had an adult life where we really had this surge of individualism in my time, and this is what I do with it. And so I think in that sense, it kind of just came naturally. And we have very opposite personalities, which I think helps us out a little bit, too. But most of the time in the car, there's not a whole lot of conversation, mm-hmm. just because you really need that time to recharge. And I have certain things that I like to do when we're on tour. Like, I really enjoy running. In the last couple of years, that's been a big thing for me on the road. And that's when I feel the most like I'm just in my own space, and no one's going to interrupt my thoughts with something. And that it's really nice to have that time, but you kind of just adapt to not having it.
Is there a song that you always love to sing together on stage? Like, is there a favorite? Is there an old favorite?
That's a great question. There are a lot, but there are certain songs, some songs you kind of get tired of doing after a few years, and other songs you really don't. And one of the ones that I never really get tired of is one that Andrew wrote, but I actually sing, called There Was a Time. And I think it's probably one of the catchier melodies that he's written, and it's one that people seem to have really gravitated to. And so I think you get this energy from the crowd. You can tell that people know the melody or are humming it.
Well, let's take a moment now to hear one of your songs from Mandolin Orange. What are you going to play for us?
I'm guessing maybe I will play that song that I mentioned, There Was a Time. I'm used to, you know, having a chorus of beautiful harmony come in behind me, but I'll just have to imagine it
try.
For tonight. Yeah, could you guys get the baritone and the tenor?
Oh, yeah.
Showed up to your wedding wearing black and blue and red, wouldn't it seem fitting? 'Cause I'm as bruised and angry as I've ever been. There was a time when I called you. There was a time when I called you mine. This old house, it's cold and empty. Even these old walls have bent. Well, I lay down and you're not with me. Waking up just sinks it in. There was a time a time when I called you mine. There's no gold on either side of the Mississippi. No silver in this world left to find. As precious
precious metal and precious memories slip away from your finger and your mind. There was a time when I called you. There was a time.
France, Mandolin Orange. Thank you so much. I know it's probably hard to do that without the other part that you're used
it's,
to.
It's well, the hardest place to play is in a radio studio. So,
oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, it's it, you know, you really hear everything. It's a little scary sometimes.
Well, but, it sounded beautiful. Well,
thank you.
All right. Well, we are going to take a break, and when we get back.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
More of the show.
Well, we'd love to shift now to talk a bit about being a woman in the world of music.
Yeah.
So you mentioned early on that some of your first experiences were you with a bunch of older guys.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to hear about sort of how what that felt like at the time. Did you notice it, and how the experience of being a woman in the bluegrass world has evolved for you?
Yeah, I think at the time, I don't know that, you know, I was 15, give or take, when I was starting to play in that context. And I don't think I really noticed all that much. Mm-hmm. I was 15 and just sort of in my own mind, and I felt very comfortable and supported by the people that I played with. And I wasn't necessarily taking in as much of the world around me, I don't think. I think I enjoyed the attention that I got, but, you know, just being on stage. But there definitely was a sort of, you know, the sort of dynamic of like, well, you know, little Emily, the token girl fiddle player kind mm-hmm. of thing, which I guess on some level was very obvious and maybe even appropriate when I was like a 15-year-old sticking out playing with a bunch of grown men. But I have noticed that I think as I've gotten older that that is kind of in some cases a cultural thing in that world, that that doesn't necessarily go away when you grow up and you're an adult, that you're still sort of the little girl.
And how does that manifest itself, like when you're touring or when you're sound checking or when you're at festivals?
I think I haven't noticed that particular dynamic as much in the world that I feel like Andrew and I spend more time in now, which is, I like to think, maybe just the broader music community. I think it is still very male dominated. And I would say, I think the thing that I experience most in that realm is more just this, that there are so many more men working at venues, touring in bands, in sort of every aspect of the work, that when you show up as a woman in a band, I feel like you're at risk of falling into, maybe in other people's eyes, one of two categories. One is either that you're just sort of like the token girl who's there to be pretty and stand on stage, but who's not really that good at music.
The tambourine girl.
Yeah. And or the other side of that, which I feel like I probably fall into more, is if you're super hands-on and like involved in everything and you're opinionated and you're being involved in things and asking questions, then all of a sudden you're this other stereotype of just like a witch. And I haven't felt it so much in the moment, but I think reflecting on it, I think subconsciously a lot of times I'm trying to ride that line. Like, I don't want to fall into either of those categories. I mean, no one would.
Right.
And so you're a little more aware of everything that you're doing and saying and how you're being perceived by other people.
And that what's so frustrating is that it's even in your head.
Yeah.
Something to be aware of.
Right.
Like, that's unnecessary labor.
Right.
Or it should be.
Right, for sure.
Well, how has your relationship to feminism evolved?
I feel like just the older I get, the more feminist I become, or the bigger role it has in my mind and in my life. And
same.
Yeah.
Same, obviously.
I think part of that was that, at least to some degree, I was raised with two sisters in a very egalitarian household. And I never paid attention to gender dynamics. I didn't have any brothers who had different expectations than, you know, what was expected of me. So I wasn't making those kind of comparisons until I was much older. And you know, I grew up with all kinds of opportunity and support. So it really didn't come up for me until I've gotten older and just being out in the world more. And it's all these just little minor things, very below the surface things in interactions with people, and especially, you know, men a lot of the time, that I feel like it takes years of like sifting through it and trying to reason through it to even start to realize, like, hey, this is messed up. Or like, why is he talking to me that way?
Yeah.
Totally. I'm a 30-year-old woman.
Yeah. I was at a homecoming event for UNC last year, and I remember being at a bar, and this man who was probably in his 50s came up to me, and I'm almost 28. He came up to me and was just like, oh, little darling, blah, 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 blah. And yeah. I would say, like, I don't know, 2 years ago, I'd been like, oh, he's just being Southern. But, like, that particular moment, I was, like, annoyed.
Yeah.
Like, why is there little in front of any way that you're describing
right.
me? And why are you describing me in that way at all anyways?
And I think, and it's not even necessarily that person in that moment
right.
was trying to be patronizing
no.
or belittle you. It's just this thing that is so pervasive that people don't even know they're doing it.
Totally.
And I think there's something, my sister and I have talked about this a lot, of being like a physically shorter woman, which like we both, I mean, I don't know, I'm 5'3.5".
Yeah, I think I'm 5'3". So,
but where that also really comes into play, I feel like it does. I mean, I work as a radio producer, so people don't physically see me until I get into the office, but sometimes it comes into play, you know, definitely once they meet me face to face, it's like, oh, okay, I can like already take you less seriously because
right.
you're small.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're on stage a lot, so I imagine that I wonder if that dynamic is present for you.
Yeah, I think so. I think, just in general, the you don't realize that you go through your whole, because we've never lived in different bodies, but
right.
like you're basically looking up to everyone you talk to, and
yeah.
everyone who's talking to you is looking down, talking down to you, not in their language necessarily,
right. yeah.
but sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely notice that. And, you know, people just comment on, I think on stage too, sometimes people aren't even really taking that in because it's such a separate space. But then a lot of times after a show or something, we'll go down and we're talking to people and they're like, oh, you're so small. I didn't realize how
yes.
small you are.
Yes.
And it just, you know, it makes you a little more self-aware, maybe in a way that you don't want to be.
Yeah, exactly. Talk a bit about what you do when you're not playing music. What are some of the things you do for, you mentioned running a little bit.
Yeah.
Other things you do for self-care and...
Running is a big part of it. That's one of the only consistencies I can have between my tour life and my home life. That's one of the only things that I do in both realms pretty much in the same way. So that's nice. But then when we're home, I have been really into sewing for the last several years. So I do a lot of sewing of garments that I make. And that's really just like therapeutic to have something to do with your hands. Mm-hmm. And I can kind of just zone out and think about whatever, or listen to podcasts or a book or something, and sew and just be really sort of isolated, which is a really nice feeling when you come home from tour.
Yeah. Very cool.
I was going to ask who some of your feminist heroes are.
I feel like the last time we asked that question, we heard Beyonce.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that I'm just saying that's not a stigmatized yeah, right. response.
I would say definitely Beyonce, because as I will now that you mention it, but I do think about, especially as it relates to getting up on stage, that is something that I've had to sort of acquire a taste for, that I'm not necessarily in the very beginning. I don't anymore, but I had a lot of stage fright and I didn't enjoy getting up on stage, and I felt inappropriate if I was, and this is probably like diving into the gender thing somewhere too, but I felt like it was rude for me to get up there and be confident, you know? And so like somehow that wasn't the right thing for me to do. But I've like started to realize, and I think just, you know, the more success that we have had, the more you get on stage and you feel very like validated by that success and people coming to your shows. But I still have to think about people like really awesome performers, and especially female performers, and how they get up and put on an amazing show and are like just leaving it all out on the court, so to speak. And I've tried to sort of take that on a little bit. I guess also, as it kind of relates to Beyonce even right now, when I think about the genre of music that we play, I would think about the Dixie Chicks as well, and how they have been willing to, you know, stand up for what they believe in at the expense of, you know,
their careers
yeah. And you know, getting death threats and all kinds of crazy terrible things. And I think because of the genre of music that we play, I see that them as, you know, people to look up to in that way.
Do you all have conversations off stage about the kind of things that you will and won't talk about on stage? Are you intentional about how political or apolitical you are, the kinds of things you're going to talk about?
It's always just constantly evolving, I think, because the climate is constantly evolving, but also it just depends on how relevant it really is to the music that we're playing. And on this album release tour, it definitely became more relevant than it had been in the past, combined with the fact that it was the election season the whole time we were on tour. But we don't necessarily have rules about what we do and don't talk about. You're always trying to ride that line where you want to talk about it, but we don't want to get on stage and like preach about our views about things. That's not, you know, we want the songs to speak for themselves, and we want to have a good time when we're up there. And but you know, it's a constant sort of thought process of also not wanting to prevent ourselves from speaking our minds either, and trying to make sure that you're doing all of those things at once.
Totally. And are you potentially prepared 30 songs?
Yeah, I have another song I could
do. One more to play us out.
All right. This is actually a song I was working on today, because it's a song I've been kind of obsessed with ever since the first time I heard it, and I've never had a real excuse to sit down and make myself learn it. But it's a guy who plays under the name Elephant Micah, and I think he's somewhat involved in the podcast scene as well, but he lives in Durham. And but I think I just discovered his music on a internet rabbit hole, but this is a song of his called The Still Life Blues. So. Well, they say that your paintings are the work of an untrained mind, unlike any image in the eyes of the unconfined. So I stare at your still life, in the natural light. Well, I see you collected, and you're put up on display. You've got people around you, and the people who those other people pay to stare at your still life.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.